battering rams when the storm surge enters into this area. So people are aware, the businesses are boarded up, and there's lots of people who have heeded those evacuation orders to get out.
And Sean, where exactly are they going? Are there evacuation centers set up?
There are lots and lots of places nearby that people can go to, schools on higher grounds. A lot of people made the decision to evacuate by the highways, Nermeen, to go to Georgia or to go to inland in Florida. But there are options for people, and there's still maybe a little bit of time for people to take heed to evacuate. But I really want to stress that this is going to be a very, very serious event, especially for people along the beaches in Manatee County, Sarasota, Bradenton, and South.
Especially a time for a community radio station like WMNF to be such an essential provider of accurate information. We want to thank Sean Canaan for being with us, WMNF news director based in Tampa, but he's now reporting live for us from the beach in Gulfport, Florida. We will continue to do coverage of this storm in the coming days. This is Democracy Now!, produced with Mike Burke, Renee Feltz, Dina Guzder, Messiah Rhodes, Maria Terracena, Tammy Warnoff, Trina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamaria Studio, John Hamilton, Ravi Karen, Hani Masood, Hannah Elias. I'm Amy Goodman with Nermeen Sheikh.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO's listeners value community, authenticity, and inclusion. If your business aligns with these values, underwriting on KBOO is an effective way to reach an engaged audience. Take advantage of the best rate and audience in Portland by going online to kboo.fm/underwriting. That's kboo.fm/underwriting.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Portland public school students try to curb gun violence.
Hurricane Milton threatens the recovery from Hurricane Helene.
And in international news, Israeli forces ramp up their bombardment of Gaza and Lebanon.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, October 9th, 2024. I'm Althea Billings.
And I'm Eliza Yurkov. The Oregon Alliance for Gun Safety says there have been at least 8 known school shooting threats in the Portland area within the first weeks of the new school year. Last year, there were at least 6 shootings near schools in the broader Portland metro area. Students like Jorge Sanchez Batista, a senior at McDaniel High School, and Naomi Basaka, an eighth grader at Laurelhurst School, testified before the Portland School Board last night to help stop the risk of gun violence. Basada said, quote, "Time and time again, school shootings bring anxiety to students of all ages, making it hard to concentrate in school. It's time for a change. It's time for teachers, administrators, district and state lawmakers to make our schools a place where we are and feel safe," end quote. They submitted a petition signed by 250 other students that's calling for 5 specific actions. First, they want the district to support students with trauma-informed practices during lockdowns and drills. Second, they want increased mental health support for students, including having more social workers. The third request is for the district to implement place-based improvements to enhance school safety, like improving lighting and maintenance of public spaces. Fourth, the students asked the school board to push the state to raise Oregon's minimum age to purchase semi-automatic guns to 21. Finally, the students want the district to require schools to distribute information on secure weapon storage. After the students' comments, the board voted to approve their legislative agenda on a 7-0 vote. The board promised to partner with local groups to support efforts to reduce gun violence.
As Hurricane Milton, now a Category 5 storm, heads towards the Tampa area, local communities are ramping up preparations, even as they work to recover from the effects of Hurricane Helene. Tramell Gomes has more details on the story.
As powerhouse Hurricane Milton nears the Florida coastline, communities in the Tampa Bay area are extending relief efforts initially launched for Hurricane Helene. Demp's Law Firm in Wesley Chapel is one of many organizations that have led relief donation drives for Hurricane Helene. But Cornelius Demp's is now grappling with the daunting possibility of widespread devastation from Hurricane Milton. He says he would ask people to pray for all in the storm's path as they adjust to the ongoing need.
And so what we decided to do is extend our hurricane relief donation drive. It was supposed to end this Friday. Instead, we're going to do it for the rest of the month of October. And mainly we need people just to donate what they can.
The firm has been collecting essential items, such as cleaning supplies, food, and clothing, with help from local groups like the NAACP in St. Petersburg and the Rotary Club of Wesley Chapel. The firm is also helping with Caramel Friendship Church to create an Amazon wish list so that people who don't live in the area can donate as well. As Hurricane Milton intensifies, Tampa Electric is prepared for widespread outages and extended restoration efforts. Spokesperson Mary Lou Carr notes the company's readiness, but warns that Milton could cause more disruptions than Hurricane Helene.
A storm of this magnitude will bring more outages and a longer restoration time than we had with Helene. It's just a bigger, more powerful storm. So that is what we anticipate. Our customers should be prepared for widespread and extended outages.
Residents relying on life-sustaining equipment should have backup power ready. And TECO advises unplugging non-essential devices to prevent surge damage. Tampa Electric has over 5,000 utility workers in Florida from out of state, staged and ready to begin repairs once it's safe. This is Tramell Gomes for Florida News Connection.
At least 400,000 people are trapped in northern Gaza as Israeli forces ramp up the bombardment of the area. Israeli forces fired on Palestinians desperately trying to flee after ordering most of northern Gaza to evacuate. Northern Gaza has not received humanitarian aid in over a week, according to aid groups and the UN. Incessant Israeli attacks have rendered the area's hospitals largely inaccessible. Sarah Voyelstik, a Doctors Without Borders project coordinator in Gaza, said, quote, "The latest move to forcefully and violently push thousands of people from northern Gaza to the south is turning the north into a lifeless desert while aggravating the situation in the south, where more than 1 million people have already been squeezed into a small portion of the Gaza Strip and live in deplorable conditions," end quote. Israel has scaled up its attacks on Hezbollah in recent days, sending ground forces into southern Lebanon from 7 points and ordering Lebanese civilians to evacuate towns as far as 20 miles from the border. Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu warned that Lebanon could face destruction and suffering like Gaza. Syrian media is reporting 7 civilians were killed and 11 others injured Tuesday in an Israeli airstrike on a residential building west of Damascus, aimed at a Hezbollah official. Israel's defense minister, Yoav Gallant, said that the next strike against Iran will be, quote, "lethal, precise, and surprising. They won't understand what happened and how," end quote. Iran vowed to respond to any further strike by Israel against it.
Multnomah County is suing Northwest Natural for its part in the 2021 heat dome and for misleading the public. Northwest Natural and the Oregon Institute of Science and Medicine, OISM, are the two newest additions to the 24 named defendants in Multnomah County's lawsuit against fossil fuel companies. Multnomah County filed the suit in June of last year, seeking to hold fossil fuel and coal-producing companies accountable for the heat dome in 2021 that killed 69 people. The county is alleging that the 24 defendants committed negligence and fraud and created a public nuisance under Oregon state tort law. While tort litigation is well established and this climate accountability lawsuit is one of dozens across the nation, Multnomah County is using a fresh approach. They're using climate science to hold corporate polluters accountable, and they have a specific catastrophic event to point to. The lawsuit states that the week-long triple-digit temperatures were not a natural weather event, but a, quote, "direct and foreseeable consequence," end quote, of catastrophic pollution and fossil fuel-induced global warming. Co-lead counsel for Multnomah County, Jeffrey Simon, told OPB, quote, residents were unprepared for it because of how fossil fuel companies have been downplaying and spreading misinformation on climate change, end quote. Multnomah County claims Northwest Natural, the largest gas provider in the Pacific Northwest, aimed to misrepresent the climate effects of its business. It also claimed that OISM, funded by Exxon and Coke, was created to propagandize and misinform the public about the seriousness of human-caused climate change. A Northwest Natural representative told OPB, quote, "We believe adding the company to the suit now is an attempt to divert attention from legal and factual flaws in the case," end quote. The county is seeking $50 million in actual damages, $1.5 billion in future damages, and $50 billion to better prepare for the changing climate.
As the need for clean drinking water rises, California and other states are considering creative solutions to increasing supplies. Recycled sewage water could be an answer. That is, if the public can accept it. Kathleen Shannon has more on the story.
As the West becomes hotter and drier, governments and experts want to diversify drinking water sources. And California is just one state looking to a culturally taboo water source, sewage. Orange County is the first in the U.S. to recycle every ounce of its wastewater. That's 130 million gallons of water purified every day, or enough to fill nearly 200 Olympic-sized swimming pools. Right now, that water is being used to replenish the local groundwater aquifer, but it's actually potable. Darren Polimis with the California State Water Resources Control Board says reusing it as drinking water makes both scientific and economic sense.
We spend a lot of money and energy moving water from different parts of the state to Southern California where it's used. Use it once, dump it in the ocean. That's maybe not the smartest way to deal with a resiliency question.
California state water officials are slated to greenlight new rules this month that would allow counties to purify wastewater and inject it immediately into the drinking supply. Cities including Los Angeles and San Diego plan to recycle wastewater similarly in the next decade. Regulators in Colorado, Florida, Iowa, and Kansas are also looking at how to use recycled water more effectively. One big hurdle is public acceptance. Several treatment facilities, including in Orange County, offer public tours and demonstrations. Director of the Berkeley Water Center, David Sedlak, says that helps build trust and acceptance over an issue that's taboo in just about every culture.
Those cultural taboos are there to protect us, but in the modern world, they don't always make a lot of sense.
Sedlak says people may not realize the quality of their normal drinking water, which could already contain runoff from city streets and farm and ranch operations. This story was produced with original reporting from Matt Vassilagombros and Kevin Hardy for Stateline. I'm Kathleen Shannon with California News Service.
President Biden cancels international travel as Florida braces for Hurricane Milton. Arizona's early voting brings a focus on native votes. And the Supreme Court considers ghost guns. With more on these stories, it's Farah Siddiqui with 2024 Talks.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
I'm canceling my trip to Germany and Africa. I just don't think I can be out of the country at this time. We're going to stay focused on what's ahead of us right now.
President Joe Biden is canceling international travel ahead of the landing of the Category 5 Hurricane Milton. He emphasizes the need to stay in the U.S. to manage the situation. Governor Ron DeSantis says nearly all of Florida is under an emergency declaration, with the huge and intense storm likely to cut right across the middle of the state. He praises the federal help they're getting.
I've spoken to the president and FEMA. We still have 51 counties that are under a state of emergency. This storm is going to go across the Florida peninsula, and it's going to exit on the east coast of Florida into the Atlantic Ocean, likely still as a hurricane.
Former President Donald Trump is fending off charges from a new book by Bob Woodward. The longtime Washington Post journalist charges that Trump still regularly speaks with Russian President Vladimir Putin, and in 2020 sent Putin COVID tests then hard to get in Moscow. Trump's campaign says the stories were made up by Woodward, who they call a deranged, demented sleazebag. At the Supreme Court, Solicitor General Elizabeth Prelogar argued firearms laws should apply to ghost guns. She says the weapons easily assembled from kits are showing up at crime scenes, but sold without background checks and impossible to trace.
They claim that if a firearm isn't 100% functional, missing just one hole that could be drilled and immediately assembled into a working gun, that can be sold to anyone online, no background check, no records, and no serial number.
Early voting has started in Arizona, and Democrats are working to turn out the state's Native American 6%. Peggy Flanagan is a member of the White Earth Chippewa and would move up to governor of Minnesota if Tim Walz becomes vice president. She says the Native vote could again be crucial in the Southwest battleground.
In 2020, we watched it come down to Arizona, and I know how powerful the Native vote was in that election, and I anticipate that the Native vote will turn up and turn out yet again.
Senator J.D. Vance, the GOP vice presidential nominee, will rally voters in Tucson today. Voting rights groups in Nevada are campaigning against a ballot measure that would require a government ID to vote in person and additional documentation for mail-in ballots. Supporters say it would restore confidence by preventing fraud, but given the cost of getting an ID, some call it a modern-day poll tax. Ather Hasibullah with the ACLU of Nevada says fraud is being used as an excuse for voter suppression.
Stringent voter ID requirements nationwide have created a greater risk of voter suppression than they have of potentially addressing voter fraud, which is non-existent.
I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an interview with Street Roots reporter Jeremiah Hayden about the latest edition of the paper, The Election Issue, Part 1. At 6, it's Magical Mystery Tour. Then at 7, Eco Justice Radio. Tonight's weather is mostly cloudy with a low around 47 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be mostly sunny with a high near 72 degrees. Today in history, Leif Erikson reaches Vinland, becoming the first European to reach North America in the year 1000. The holiday was referenced in the episode Bubble Buddy of the Nickelodeon animated series SpongeBob SquarePants. SpongeBob, wearing a Viking helmet and beard, shouts, "Hey everybody, it's Leif Erikson Day!" The quote of the day is from thriller expert Alfred Hitchcock, who directed films like The Birds, Psycho, and Strangers on a Train. He said, quote, "Luck is everything. My good luck in life was to be a really frightened person. I'm fortunate to be a coward, to have a low threshold of fear, because a hero couldn't make a good suspense film."
The Ute Tribe and two Colorado senators collaborated on a bill that would expand federal public land protections in the Gunnison River Basin. Early voting starts today in Arizona, and Julie Kitka became the first Alaska Native leader to be inducted into the National Native American Hall of Fame. With those stories and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Two Colorado senators recently introduced a bill that would significantly expand federal public land protections in the Gunnison River Basin. The legislation was developed in collaboration with one of the state's tribes. KUNC's Lucas Brady Woods reports for the Mountain West News Bureau.
The Gunnison Outdoor Resources Protection Act, or GORP Act, would expand protections for more than 730,000 acres. Part of the legislation would transfer a massive ranch owned by the Ute Mountain Ute Tribe from private land into a reservation trust. Chairman Manuel Hart says that will give tribal members more access to part of their ancestral land.
We as Ute people are the original stewards of these mountains, which we call the Rocky Mountains, especially in the area that this bill is pertaining to.
Local counties, municipalities, and organizations also collaborated on the bill. It proposes a number of new special management areas for forest and wildlife conservation and restoration in the Gunnison Basin. I'm Lucas Brady Woods in Denver.
Wednesday is the first day of early voting in Arizona, and both vice presidential candidates will be making their cases to voters. Alex Gonzalez has more.
Democratic VP candidate Minnesota Governor Tim Walz will attend events in the Phoenix area today, including a meeting with tribal leaders of the Gila River Indian community, before making his way to Tucson. Minnesota Lieutenant Governor Peggy Flanagan says the Harris-Walz campaign knows the importance of Arizona's 11 electoral votes, but also how decisive the Native vote can be.
in 2020, we watched it come down to Arizona. And I know how powerful the Native vote was in that election. And I anticipate that the Native vote will turn up and turn out yet again.
Indigenous people account for about 6% of Arizona's population. And while Native voters have typically leaned Democratic, Republicans are also aiming to engage them. GOP Vice Presidential nominee Ohio Senator J.D. Vance holds a rally in Tucson today. And early voters will begin casting their ballots in what's sizing up to be an extremely tight race. Voters in precincts on the Navajo and Hopi reservations in northeastern Arizona cast about 60,000 ballots in 2020, compared to just about 45,000 in 2016, according to the Associated Press. Flanagan calls it significant and says she's encouraging all Arizonans to vote early.
And it's really powerful. You turn up, you vote early, and then you can spend the rest of your time knocking on doors, calling people, and having conversations with your friends and relatives about the power of their vote, especially in Arizona.
Vice President Kamala Harris is set to return to Arizona for the second time in 2 weeks to speak at a campaign rally in Phoenix Thursday evening. Former President Donald Trump will also make his way back to the Grand Canyon State on Sunday for a rally in Prescott. I'm Alex Gonzalez reporting.
Julie Kitka became the third Alaska Native leader to be inducted into the National Native American Hall of Fame at a recent ceremony in Oklahoma City. Kitka recently stepped down as the longtime president of the Alaska Federation of Natives and will deliver the keynote speech at the AFN convention in Anchorage next week. Kitka spent more than three decades working for AFN and was known to have the ear of national policymakers, from congressional leaders to military generals to White House cabinet members and staffers. She developed a wide range of connections to promote Alaska Native causes. AFN's first president, Emil Noddy, was inducted into the Hall of Fame in 2021. The late civil rights leader, Elizabeth Peratrovich, was also honored in 2019. Five other Native Americans were inducted to the Hall of Fame this year. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Researchers say Latino populations in the U.S. have traditionally underutilized government programs designed to improve quality of life. A host of federal incentives for home energy efficiency options are on the table, and Minnesota organizers are assisting Latino households with the application process. Mike Moen has more on the story.
Summer-like temperatures are still around, but winter is lurking, and Minnesotans will soon have to crank up their thermostat. There's outreach to help Latinos use federal incentives to lower their energy bills. The Inflation Reduction Act provides a mix of tax credits and rebates for households considering options like solar panels or more efficient heating systems. This type of information is often slow to reach underserved populations, and Minnesota's Communities Organizing Latino Power in Action, or CUPAL, doesn't want that to happen this time. CUPAL navigator Danny Garcia says his team is taking a multifaceted approach.
We translate this information to make it more accessible. We are relying heavily on social media, creating videos, creating flyers to distribute.
A specific IRA initiative, the Home Energy Rebate Program, will be carried out by the state, and agencies are still preparing for launch. Other incentives, namely tax credits, are already available. Beyond creating awareness, community navigators will focus on application assistance. A 2022 national analysis found that Hispanic families were less likely to take advantage of government programs due to anti-immigrant politics and other factors. It's not just overcoming trust issues. Garcia suggests some residents might feel overwhelmed when considering all their options. But he says they want them to look at the bigger picture, and a more energy-efficient home with cleaner air running through it stands a better chance of improving outcomes as opposed to sticking with aging systems and appliances.
You can get sick more often, and this just creates a circle, a burden. Then you need to spend more money in your health, and then you don't have enough money to cover other bills.
The U.S. Energy Department shows the Hispanic community faces a median energy burden 24% higher than that of white households. And the IRA has a bonus credit program specifically geared for those often stuck with higher energy bills, with increased tax credits for solar and wind projects built in these communities or serving low-income residents. This is Mike Moen for Minnesota News Connection.
A new study reveals that Pennsylvania kids are regularly exposed to lead in school drinking water. The study uncovers shortcomings in 9 school districts across the state and urges state lawmakers to pass legislation to replace older lead-contaminated fountains in schools. Danielle Smith reports.
Concerning levels of lead has been detected in the drinking water at some Pennsylvania schools, according to a new report. The investigation examined 9 large school districts across the state and reveals widespread noncompliance with safety regulations. David Mazur with Penn Environment says his organization filed a set of right-to-know requests with school districts across the state, and in all 9 cases, found the districts were not implementing best practices to protect kids from lead in drinking water.
8 of the 9 school districts were actually violating Pennsylvania law when it came to properly testing and reporting for lead in school drinking water, and even for giving children proper access to adequate amounts of drinking water.
Mazur adds several districts violated the requirement to have 1 drinking fountain for every 100 kids and occupants in a building. He notes there is no safe level of lead, especially for children. Exposure can lead to learning disabilities and hearing and speech problems, as it affects brain development and lowers IQ. Mazur says his group is calling on members of the General Assembly to immediately implement 2 bipartisan proposals, Senate Bill 986 and House Bill 2011. They would require all Pennsylvania school districts to replace older drinking water systems.
Basically, they require school districts to implement the best practices. That includes requiring all school districts to replace old drinking fountains, any drinking fountain put in before 2014, with lead filtering, water bottle filling stations, and drinking fountains.
He says the legislation also includes about $30 million to help school districts cover the costs of these upgrades to protect kids' health.
I'm Danielle Smith, Keystone State News Connection.
Coho salmon are passing through Willamette Falls at record numbers, but why are they here? Previously referred to as the ghost fish because of their inconsistent spawning and returning habits, their life cycle and presence in the upper Willamette Basin remain mysterious. Coho are native to many rivers in Oregon, but only winter steelhead and spring chinook were known to migrate above the Willamette Falls. A fish ladder was installed in 1885, but coho weren't using it to move above the falls, partly due to the high levels of pollutants released by early industry. Coho hatcheries started in the 1950s, but the last stocking took place in 1996 in the Tualatin River, never successfully producing large adult populations. Some speculate rogue anglers established small tributaries with coho smolts to illegally kickstart the population. The official line from the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, ODF, is, "This current run is the remnants of those old stocking programs." State officials have opened new areas to legal coho harvest as far south as the Mackenzie River this year due to the huge return. This year's run may even be larger than last year's, when almost 40,000 coho passed through the upper Willamette Basin. ODF regularly updates the current fishing regulations and details about how and when to fish for coho.
KBU News poet Dan Raphael wonders if there's a calm eye in the hurricane of war.
It's not as if life was tolerable in Gaza, Lebanon, and Israel October 6th last year. Remember that Langston Hughes' poem that begins with, "What happens to a dream deferred," ends with, "Or does it explode?" Pressure and violence take quantum leaps, then level off with more energy and unpredictability. The way coal and gasoline powered industry and 7-8 billion people triggers the Earth's immune system, expressing through the physics of heat and moisture, a new hurricane heading to Florida and the South nowhere close to cleaning up after Helene. And what's been seething in American politics with society's fiscal bloodstream hoarded, people with nowhere to go but into their screens, without first-hand experience, the actual world gets muddled with misinformation and uncertainty. Coca-Cola and Oreos have combined their flavors. What's next? Nacho cheese Mountain Dew? Beef suet gelato with fentanyl sprinkles? American flag Walmart bags given to everyone Trump deports? For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, October 9th, 2024. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Dan Raphael, Josh Salem, and Eliza Yurkov. The producer is Eliza Yurkov, and our engineer is Ray Bodwell. Special thanks to Mike Moen, Danielle Smith, Trimmel Gomes, Antonia Gonzalez, Kathleen Shannon, and Farah Siddiqui. The director of evening news is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eliza Yurkov.
And I'm Althea Billings. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members, lovely folks like you. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for news in depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You are listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. I'm speaking with Street Roots reporter Jeremiah Hayden about the latest edition of the paper, out October 9th. It's the November general elections issue, part one. Welcome to the show, Jeremiah.
Hi, Althea. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. So, tell us about it. What all is in Street Roots General Election Issue Part 1?
Like you mentioned, this is Part 1 of 3 of Street Roots election coverage. There are a lot of candidates to get through in this election. I do want to start out giving a shout-out